30-minute reviews, beware of spoilers, and exploring hyperspace lanes are all available ad-free. But if you want to support the show, you can go to bewareofspoilers.com and click the support button that's available on the Spotify website. Thank you. Good morning, or not morning, evening, and welcome to Beware of Spoilers. I am Adam. I'm tired. It's been a very long, like, week or so, just in general. Because, like, I don't know, I'm not feeling 100% on top of everything else. So, regardless, here we are. I've now seen the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Guy Ritchie's new movie about the first Black Ops mission in the history of the world. And by Black Ops mission, what we mean is a mission carried out by agents of a government who would, in the event they're captured, disavow said agents of the government and pretend they, you know, they had nothing to do with it because it was risky. In this case, it was because the geopolitical situation in Europe was a little more complex than it would seem during World War II, because Spain was quote-unquote neutral, but there was a Spanish Civil War in the 30s that led to the installation of a fascist government, in the same way as, in the same way that Germany had Hitler and Italy had Mussolini. There was also, I forgot what the dictator's name was, but he was ruling the kingdom of Spain at the time. The problem is, or the difference was, while Mussolini had aligned with Hitler, he did not. So Spain was neutral. The thing was, a small push would have put them aligned with Germany, and in this case, that small push would have been the English attacking their sovereignty by destroying this port where the U-boats were being held, cared for it. Which leads to the need for this mission. It's like, they need to get rid of this, like, this will increase hostility if they fail, or if it comes out the British are behind it. So they have to go in surreptitiously and destroy this ship that is providing supplies to the U-boats. So that's basically the premise of what this is, and it's all based on reality. I don't know how much of it actually happened the way it did, but, you know, it's interesting to see it play out. And I think it's a surprise, like, this is a dad movie. Like, this is a movie that your dad will watch about a year from now on, like, HBO or on TNT, Cuts or Shreds. And be like, huh, this is a good movie, you gotta watch this. Like, well, yeah. Like, it's entertaining enough. And look, who doesn't love watching Nazis get fucking just, you know, murdered up and down the movie? Like, it's an interesting enough story, and it's one that you don't know. It's one of those things that, like, I'm thinking about while I'm watching, and I'm like, huh, so I really didn't know this, because it's like, when you think back to your world history class in high school, it's like, the big thing was, like, the Germans had U-boats, and that was their big thing. They kept, you know, they kept the war going on as long as it did, because they had control of the Atlantic, because they had these submarines that were hard to track and immensely powerful. And I never really, you know, questioned how they got around that, because they're just like, and then the Allies win the war. And then America invades, and the Allies win the war. And it's like, but how did they get around that? And it's like, well, this is how they got around that. This is how they ended the U-boat, you know, reign of terror in the Atlantic. And it's an interesting movie and an interesting approach to telling that, you know, telling that story. Henry Cavill, always great. He is, you know, he is yet another example of him being effortlessly charming in a movie where he's playing he's 100% a sociopath in the movie. He's a sociopath for the British, to kill Nazis, but he's 100% sociopath, and just so charming. I don't know how the fuck we managed to get multiple Superman movies with him, where he just has no charm whatsoever, which is baffling to me. But he nails it here again. He does another great job. And then the rest of the cast is great too. Alan Rickson, I haven't seen Reacher. I've only heard good things, and I see this man in this movie, and I did see him in, what's it called? In, Fast X. That was the other movie I saw him in. And this man is built like a fucking, like, brick shithouse, and, like, look, I hate doing this. I hate being the one that's like, oh, and what franchise can we tie this guy up in for the next 30 years? And it's like, yeah, this man wants to play Batman? Let this man play Batman. It is pitch-perfect casting. If not Batman, watching him with blonde hair and this goatee running around with a bow and arrow, I'll take him as Oliver Queen. Either or. Put him somewhere in the DC universe if he wants to do that. Like, goddamn, this man is fantastic. What else have we got? Isaac Gonzalez is, you know, as always, great. She has a great performance here. I don't know the actor's name, but the guy who played Jameis in Dune is here, too. I believe that's who that is. Either that or I'm making an assumption. I'm fairly sure, guys, out there for, like, the first, like, 10 minutes I'm watching this. And I'm like, I've seen this guy somewhere. Why are there two of these so close together? I've seen this guy somewhere. And then it clicked. Jameis, that's what it is. And I'll tell you what made it click was, I tend to sit, because I go by myself, I would say 9.9 out of 10 times I go to the movies by myself, and I'm sitting, I always sit, like, back to the left, so that way I'm out of the way and not, you know, obstructing where other people could sit. I like to position myself out of the way, so I'm sitting in the back of the theater, and this time I didn't do that. This time I sat, like, kind of back middle, because I was like, it's Thursday night, I'm not just in a big crowd, I could probably get back middle and not be a pain in the ass to anyone. So I get that seat. But I'm directly under the projector. And by extension, the projection room is directly over my shoulder. And the thing that made me realize it was the guy who played Jameis was the fact that I'm sitting there and I can hear the entirety of Dune Part 2 playing in the next room, in the next theater. And I'm just like, goddamn. Like, look, I'm not saying this movie's terrible, but, like, sitting there watching this while hearing Dune play and listening to, like, the, you know, like, I was able to hear the whole scene where Paul goes in and ascends to be, you know, the Lisan al-Ghaib, and, you know, he has that speech. I could hear that through this window, and I'm like, god damn, I'd so much rather be watching that movie right now. But regardless, here we are. I'm intrigued. Like, I was intrigued by this movie. It kept my attention when I wasn't paying attention to Dune in the next theater. I like the way they made Ian Fleming into a character, because I do know he did work British intelligence during the war, and that is what kind of inspired, well, I mean, not kind of, it did inspire, you know, James Bond 007. Like, his time working in intelligence kind of informed that whole thing. And to see him in this role here and acknowledge that's kind of cool. Yeah, I mean, it's an entertaining enough movie. I don't know if it's, like, my big thing is, this movie is, I think it's a hard R. Not a hard, it's a soft R. Like, because, like, a hard R, the movie where, like, there's gore. And, like, you see, like, it had to be rated R, because they showed the Red Band trailer for Deadpool before this, so it has to be rated R. Because the key difference is, like, he says fuck once in the Red Band trailer, and the pegging line in the PG-13 cut, it's not, pegging isn't new for me, but it is for Disney. It's a hard rate, an R rating isn't new for Disney, is new for Disney, but it is for me. They show the R-rated ones, and this had to be an R-rated movie. But my thing is, it's like, it's not shot like an R-rated, like, it doesn't look like an R-rated movie when you watch it. It's not like there's a ton of cursing like I said, it feels like a dad movie, where this is a movie that's going to run in syndication on cable, and because of that, they kind of kept it toned down from where it could be. Like, the violence is there, and the violence is over the top, but it's clear how you can re-edit this movie pretty easily to make it a PG-13 to air on cable. The one curse is easy to remove, as seen by the one time they say fuck, it's in the trailer, but again, they don't say it in the trailer, it's the please do, and then there's the radio static off. Like, that is the easiest way to just, you know, use the cut from the trailer, and boom, you're done. It's that kind of thing where I'm watching this and I'm like, huh. There, you know, it feels like this is a movie that, like, it's kind of the reverse of Rebel Moon, which we'll talk about that this weekend because we got Rebel Moon Part 2 coming out. But it's the reverse of Rebel Moon, where Rebel Moon felt like it was, like, instead of releasing a R-rated cut and then doing a PG-13 cut after that was, like, you know, made for cable, it felt like the one that was made for cable and was shot really weird and edited really weird because it's the made-for-cable edition of the same movie. Like, that is the one that was released first. This feels like it's a movie where it's like, we're keeping in mind that we could shoot, this is something that we want to play syndication. So let's shoot it as such out of the gate. As such, I don't think there's a ton of reason to rush out and see this in a theater. I think it's entertaining enough where if you need a movie to see this weekend, it is worth the time to go see it. But I don't think it's worth rushing out because it's that great. It's the kind of thing where it's like, this is a quintessential 4 movie on our scale. Where a 4 is a movie that, like, yeah, you don't have to rush out and see, but it definitely benefits from a theatrical experience. Because it, like, and the thing is, too, it is very rare that I'll say a movie that I see in the theater is not benefited by the theatrical experience. This is a 4, though. It is clearly a movie that is designed to... It will grip you as you watch it and all that, but, like, there's only a few points where you feel there are any real stakes. Like, they don't do a great job building tension. Like, what was the movie? Civil War had probably one of the most tense movies moments in a movie in the last few years, and where you know, the Jesse Plemons scene. Like, there's nothing close to that. There's no, like, oh shit, is this guy gonna die? Or, like, anything like that. Like, not really. Like, you never get that sense of, like, oh, these guys are expendable, someone could die. Like, you know... It's interesting, but it's not, like, it's not something that you need to rush out and watch immediately. And in fact, I would actually be curious to see this when it comes to cable eventually, to see how they cut it to fit it into a PG-13 movie. Because I don't think it's that hard, but I'd be interested to see what they cut and see how they re-edit some of the action sequences. Because, like, the worst of the action sequences is there's blood and gore. And I saw someone talk about, like, I think it was on a podcast I was listening to. I think it was No Film School. They were talking about the 24, what's it called? Like, the 24 way of shooting action. Where it's, you know, the TV show 24 kind of, you know, pioneered this thing where you get these big action set pieces on a TV budget where it's like, there's a gunshot, then you cut to the guy who's just taking a dive because he got shot. There's no blood, there's no viscera, there's nothing like that. That's a lot of what this is. Where it's like, people get stabbed, people get, you know, people get shot, but there's not a ton of blood or anything like that, which makes it easy to, you know, edit through to get to a more manageable, TV-friendly edition of the movie. What else have we got with this? I think the soundtrack's great. I really like the soundtrack. I think that the score is the chorus the score is, you know, is pretty reasonably strong and interesting. And yeah, it just the one thing that had me kind of like I feel like the suspension of disbelief was gone was like, did they, number one, silencers don't work the way they do in movies like that. We're never going to get past that, I don't think, where it's like, the silencer in a movie is always designed to be a way to get in and quietly kill people without worrying about being caught. We're never going to get away from that. That's just, it's, you know, it's a stealth mechanic in a movie or a video game that we're never going to move past. Like, I'm just going to, you know, jump off that. My thing is, do they have silencers in World War II? Because I am not 100% certain they did. And I was kind of like, yeah, it's working way too well if they did. But yeah, and the movie relies a lot on silencers. Which again, the other issue is it's like, again, coming off of Civil War, where it's this big bombastic thing with a lot of shooting and a lot of gunplay, to hear the way that's worked into the sound mix, and then to come to this, which is just kind of generic kind of action movie kind of way of handling it, it's kind of a letdown. But yeah, I mean, I would recommend seeing this movie, maybe not in the theater, maybe wait for it to hit streaming if you're not super gung-ho about it. If you're a real, you know, World War II guy and you really like watching about World War II, or you want to just watch Nazis get killed, you know, this is the movie for you. There's some catharsis in that. I'm not going to judge. Go see this movie in the theater. If not, wait for it to hit streaming. I think it'll hit Stars because it's a Lionsgate movie, and I feel like those two are affiliated. Lionsgate tends to end up on Netflix, I think. Because Ballad Songbird and Six is still not on there. But What's It Called is. No Hard Feelings was. I don't know. It's just whatever the contract says, I guess. But regardless, we will wrap up there for tonight. So this morning I wasn't feeling great, so I didn't record an episode. But tomorrow we'll be doing X-Men 97 as scheduled. Saturday morning we'll be doing Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, because Zack Snyder... whatever. And then Sunday we will do The Girls on the Bus. We'll do the new episode of The Bad Batch on Monday evening. The Sympathizer, I've decided to just do one big one at the end of the run of the show, because I watched the first episode and I think it's really good, the show. The thing is, it's not something where I feel like talking about it on a weekly basis is the best way to handle it. So I feel like we'd be better off just doing one big lump episode at the end of it and being like, here's, you know, the full thoughts and the whole thing. Like, Robert Downey Jr. is going to be nominated for, if not win, an Emmy for this, but we'll talk about that in a few weeks when the show ends. But we're not going to do weekly on that. It's one of those things, like, I watch it and I'm like, I don't think, like, this is something that I can do weekly on. But we'll wrap up there for tonight. And until tomorrow morning, have a great rest of your week.